This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
I, Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. You look at the calendar, it's Friday. What does that mean? Somich joins. Mike Somich, of course, VSIN betting analyst. Sounds nice to say that, officially part of the team. RacingDudes.com handicapper as well. You want to get involved in some horse racing, you can find Mike on Twitter at SomoBomb18. And as we say hi to Somich, and again, a congratulations, as he's going to be, if you like VSIN and you like football, you're going to get a lot of Mike Somich. We'll have the official announcement next week, but Saturdays and Sundays, bam, smack dab in the middle of the day, you're going to have 3 to 4 hours of Mike Somich every Saturday and Sunday. But I want to start here as I talk to Somich and Amal and Dustin. I made a big life decision today, and I'd like to get the three of your take on what I did. I am adjusting. I'll start with you, Dustin, because I think this will be curious to you. I made a big life decision. I'm going to the stand-up desk. Now, I ordered a nice one. Whether or not I can put it together is yet to be seen, or if I'm going to have to go task rabbit like a loser. But I got a stand-up desk coming Saturday, big guy. Your boy is standing to work. Thoughts?
Standing up is usually only used for when you are trying to express more anger. But however, I will say this. I am hosting here tomorrow, and hopefully I will be able to stand up the entire show as well, because I prefer when I'm hosting to stand up. I find sitting for 3 hours to be absolutely brutal at 38 years old, and you are a much older man than me.
Okay, first off, not much. Wow. Secondly, an interesting way, Mike and Amal, for him to flex about hosting when I'm talking about myself and standing. But anyway, Amal, thoughts on me standing? It's a big life move for a single 45-year-old.
I'm a big advocate of it. I like it. First of all, anytime you do any kind of public speaking or what have you, I mean, I get this is not necessarily a public speech, but it's much better. You just are able to kind of convey your message in a much more profound manner when you're standing up when you're speaking.
Wait, hold on. I think I completely confused you guys. I'm not going to be standing up during the show.
Oh.
I just got a stand-up desk for when I prepare for the show in the morning. Somich, you're a very progressive guy. It feels like you're the type of dude that does cold plunges. How about standing at the desk? Is this like new age?
I've lived the stand-up desk life, so I've got some experience on this one. I actually, you got it. Like, I agree with you. When you are staring at a computer for a while, it is so much nicer to be able to stand up, sit down, go through that process. As for doing it during the show, if you were doing it during the show, I was going to tell you that is a mistake. For me, if I'm standing, I use my hands so much more to talk, and I move around way too much to be able to be actually on one of these type shows. It's why I consistently sit for these. But the stand-up desk is life-changing. I mean, you don't realize how much better your body feels if you just stand up for 30 minutes, then sit down for 30 minutes, stand up for 30 minutes. It gets the blood flowing. You don't feel as stiff in your lower back. So it's a strong move. However, I do have to say, if your big life change here is a stand-up desk, we might need to get you out a little bit more, Patrick.
Well, a couple of things. It's very dangerous on a Friday to say blood flow and stiff around Dustin Sweetelson. So we're just going to chill. We're going to chill with that. And big guy, you thought I was talking about standing during the show.
Yeah.
No, I'm just going to be working in the morning at a stand-up desk.
I like to sit for my prep because that's like the time I'm at peace. And then I see a mall and I'm in here and I'd like to stand and match the parsing energy.
Okay. By the way, off topic, Somich, are you going full beard to look sharp?
I appreciate it, man. I'm experimenting here, right? So I've never had facial hair until about 2 years ago, and it was always patchy. So now we're trying to figure out how to make it work. So now we're going with the full beard, but trimming it a little more. It's a process, man. This thing doesn't grow overnight.
More importantly, what does wifey think?
Wifey is the one who pushed the beard on me. So she is the one who pushed this forward. And so I am fully accepting it and trying to figure out how to make it look as good as possible.
That's like getting a new husband.
You just got to wait. Dustin and I were on the same wavelength. That's called cuckold. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, she's trying to experience something new. And this is a good way to get around those rules of marriage, if you know what I'm saying.
Hey, whatever keeps it hot, Dustin, you just got to keep it working.
She looked at him sideways one day and said, you know what I'm thinking? We're going to grow some facial hair, Mike, because what's going on over here?
We used to joke all the time because the only time, so when I was working in the business world, it was a no facial hair policy where I was working. So every time we go on vacation for 2 or 3 weeks, I just let it go. And that's when she decided that this was something that needed to be permanent. So when I switched over and started doing horse racing and sports gambling full time, she's like, all right, now you're growing that thing out. You got no choice.
I'm going to beat them all to the joke. Who'd you work for? The Steinbrenners? Okay. Too easy. Too easy. Samich, so Amal mentioned it when he was talking about Seattle, that he knows that you were high on the team. We're sitting 9.5. Now, you know, you can find a 9 out there as far as regular season win total. I'll get you in division. We were talking about JSN and potentially his numbers as Offensive Rookie of the Year. I mean, they're loaded on the outside. It's a team and the Seahawks you're high on. I'll let you run with it. What's up?
Yeah, I don't think people realize how good last year's draft class was. They took two offensive linemen, both tackles, Cross and Lucas, in the first two rounds. Everyone knows about Walker III, the running back who's going to be back this year. They also took Woolen, who's going to be their number two cornerback this year. All four of them popped. I mean, Walker, I think, is a very good running back. He's going to have a nice offensive line to work behind. And Cross and Lucas specifically, the two tackles, two of the toughest positions to play in the NFL, right tackle and left tackle, were both very good for about 12 weeks. And Woolen was a top 15, top 20 cornerback for about 12 weeks. All of them hit the rookie wall last year. So a big part of playing Seattle here is saying that you believe in the progression of these guys, that this offensive line is going to be significantly improved because you have two second-year offensive tackles who both showed early and then faded down the stretch. By the way, that's also when Geno Smith's stats started to fade. He was top five PFF, top five ESPN quarterback through the majority of the season last year. About week 12, week 13, the offensive line started to struggle. That's when he started to struggle. Their biggest weakness on defense last year was the run game. They were giving up too many yards on the ground. They bring in Wagner to address that problem. I love the draft. I love that they have a cornerback on the other side of Woolen now with Witherspoon, who they took in the first round. I love the outside receivers. You've got three legitimate weapons out there. And I understand you kind of have to believe in Geno Smith here if you want to make the case for the Seahawks. Well, I kind of believe in Geno Smith. If you look at what he is good at, it is quick throws, checkdowns, facing defenses that he'll take what they give them. Well, that's what NFL defenses do now. They play this too high shell, and they're willing to let you get these 5, 6, 10-yard completions and make you drive down the field that way. That was what Geno Smith is actually good at. This is the first time he's been playing when that defense has been implemented consistently. If that's what he sees again this year, I think they're able to take a step forward, specifically with all these second-year players and rookies who I think are going to be impactful here right out of the gate for them. And on top of that, I heard them all say, you know, well, 44% of their wins came against the Cardinals and the Rams. Guess who they play four times this year? The Cardinals and the Rams, and they are both still terrible. So the schedule gets tough in one segment, and that's where they have to play San Francisco twice and Dallas and Philadelphia in four back-to-back weeks. But the nice part about this schedule as well is that there's winnable games early. They get games against Washington. They get games against the Steelers. They get games against the Titans. So games that are winnable late as well. And the both games against San Francisco, they have a slight edge here. So the first game is a Thursday night in Seattle. So 4 days rest. If you want to play a Thursday night, you're playing a division game, you want to be the home team. And then the second game is on a Sunday. Well, the 49ers are coming off a Monday night football game into that game. And Seattle is coming off a Thursday night game into that game, which is going to be on Thanksgiving. So 10 days rest versus 5 days rest. So rest advantage in both of the games that they're going to be facing San Francisco. Winnable games early, winnable games late, and a lot of progression in really important spots on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball.
I think Mike makes a ton of great pro arguments for the Seahawks. For me, it's a combination of, I will tell you, I am not as down, Mike, on Geno Smith as maybe some other people are. And I like what you said. They've got some great talent on the perimeter. Obviously, Lockett's a guy, JSN, but DK Metcalf as well. I think this team could be dangerous. I did like Cross a lot coming out of Mississippi State, Patrick. I think this team can be dangerous, but what concerns me is defensively, guys, they were not great. They were poor against the run. The other thing is when you look through the schedule, you mentioned, Mike, there are some patches where it gets a bit challenging. They do have the Cardinals and Rams combined four times. But man, this is a team. We saw them beat the Lions last year, gave up 45 points in that game. They beat the Jets down the stretch, who were anemic. I just don't know if what they accomplished last year was a product of them being a better and a good team, or the benefit of playing just a bad schedule, Denver, the Jets, and I mentioned the other teams in there. So I'm a little bit taken wait and see approach. I still think the Niners are the class of the West.
You can respond, Mike. Go ahead.
I won't disagree with you on the Niners, the class of the West. I finished my power rankings today. I have the Niners at 7. I've got this Seahawks team at 12. So I do have the Niners rated higher than the Seahawks here. When you look at the overall ratings for the teams, but this is a Seattle team who I think has a big chance of stepping forward, and you are dead on. They had a lot of winnable games in the schedule last year. I don't think any of us expected them to be as good as they were last year. I know that going into the season, we thought this was going to be a low rated team, maybe one of the four or five worst in the NFL. The defensive side is the concern, right? If those two offensive tackles play well, this offense can be very, very good. They need Jamal Adams to come back. He's supposed to come off the PUP list in the week 2 or week 3. That will help the run game. Wagner helps the run game. You now have two legitimate cornerbacks. This defense could actually take a massive step forward compared to what you saw last year because of these offseason additions and the second year in the system for some of these guys.
By the way, I don't even know if there's a question. Would the three of you agree with me? By far and away, the biggest surprise of last year was Seattle winning 9 games. Like, we had Seattle beat reporters talking about 3-4 wins maybe last year.
That was my number, 3 or 4 for them last year. Yeah, absolutely. You're right.
Yeah, I thought they were in the Bryce Young sweepstakes.
100%. $1.60 on the 49ers in division. That does feel steep, though, Samich. Plus 195 on the Seahawks.
Yeah, I mean, this Seahawks number has gotten bet down pretty aggressively. You could get this at close to 3-1 earlier this year, and it's been bet all the way down to plus 195. Honestly, if you're going to bet either of these, just bet the exacta, because I don't see any way the Rams or Cardinals are finishing second in this division. You can get a better price if you play the exact finish Seattle-San Francisco or San Francisco-Seattle than you can betting either to win the division.
Samich pulled the Seahawks. Thanks for asking. I'll take it from here. He couldn't wait to talk about Seattle on this show. When we come back, he's got some week 1 plays, and we'll talk about the pre tonight with Samich here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
I think the mics got cut, boys. A View to a Kill, Moore's last outing, underrated. Anywho, so is the College Football Betting Guide and the NFL Betting Guide. Transition, $19, VSiN.com/subscribe. Here's the deal. I don't need a script, Sweetelson. Get this out of my face. You get everything we offer. Now, here's what I would say. Why waste $19? After a month, you're going to love it and you're going to sign up. It's $199. You know, Samich was just talking about plays he sent us earlier today. So including Samich, a host on the network, but guest as well. If they give us a play, you're going to get every play every day. But then you add in the betting splits, you add in all the tools, and you add in the guides. It's worth it. Through the Super Bowl, you don't have to worry. We'll do the work for you. VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, we got you back. Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw, and Mike Samich here on a Friday, Sharp Money. Hope you're having a nice week as we head into the weekend. And Amal, I'll ask you a good question, because you mentioned, I believe you had San Francisco in your power ratings. You don't have to give us the sauce, but it is hard to put together. Samich's power ratings, he had the 49ers at 7, and I believe you had the Seahawks at 12. What we can do is we can talk about your ratings, and then we can tie those into, you've got a couple of week 1 plays already, but let's go ahead and talk about the process of putting your ratings together.
It's a pretty long for me. So I like PFF quite a bit. So I rely on a lot of their different player grades. So I'm looking at specific spots and rosters that I don't know very well, but I look at offensive line, defensive line, quarterback, coaches, skill positions, and then secondary. And I rate each of those and then kind of build together how. The tough part is you have to then weight them. So you can't just put 1 through 32, right, and say Patrick Mahomes, number one quarterback, because the gap between 1 and 2 may not be the same as the gap between 2 and 3. And so you have to be able to weight each of those position groups and those pieces in different ways so that you have an ability to then have the biggest gap. So Patrick Mahomes, to me, easily the best quarterback in the NFL. There's a large gap there. There isn't as big of a gap in my mind in some of these secondaries. So I don't want the gap from number one secondary to the number two secondary to be as big as the number one quarterback to the number two quarterback. So I essentially take all of those different ratings, put them together. I heavily weight quarterback and coach, and then I put together a full rating for a team and then sort them out 1 through 32, and there you go.
Love that. Go into a little bit about, you said San Francisco, number 7. Tell us where you kind of come out with some of the other teams near the top, and then later on when we get some time, I want to ask you about the quarterbacks. I'm fascinated because you said you had a large separation between Mahomes and everybody else.
Yeah, so Kansas City comes up number one for me. I still have them as the best team in the NFL. And these are week-by-week betting. So this isn't something I use for futures or use for divisional betting because this is surely just looking at each week the roster that I expect to be on the field in week one. And then you make tweaks based on injuries. You know, a quarterback injury can change literally a team's rating by up to 6 points. And, you know, through most of last season, my number one rated team was 8 to 8.5 points better than an average team. So a 6 point swing makes a huge difference in these type of ratings. But I have Chiefs 1, Eagles 2, Bills 3, Cowboys 4, Bengals 5. It gets a lot closer when you get into that middle group. And so, you know, the 10 through 15 is really tightly bunched, and that's Browns, Broncos, Chargers, Seahawks, Jets, Steelers. So it's interesting once you get into that middle group and how fine it can be and how a single injury or two can really change it. And also just how teams play, and specifically offensive lines, how quickly they're able to gel. If you're able to see the improvement or the cohesity in those offensive lines, that can boost up a team pretty good as well once you get going week to week.
Anything stand out, Amal? Immediately, Cowboys 4
yeah.
did pop. That's what I'll start with. Cowboys, I think the offense takes a step back. I think it was a mistake to move on from Kellen Moore. I think McCarthy, I'll use a word that I can't stop with. He's a total donk. Although they've got a ton of skill, why Cowboys at 4?
Well, it's funny, the lowest rating they got of any position group is coach, which is not something you necessarily want. But when you look at the roster, I mean, defensively, this could be a top five defense with a top five offense on the other side. I'm not positive what we're going to see week one. This is a team that could move a point or point and a half off of week one, depending on what coaching we see specifically on the offensive side of the ball. I want them to continue to throw the ball. They need to throw the ball more on early downs. But a big thing for me and why the Cowboys jumped up is when you compare the efficiency of Zeke Elliott to the efficiency of Tony Pollard, it's not even close. Tony Pollard's significantly better at that running back spot. If you take all of those Zeke carries and you give them to Tony Pollard, this is a really, really good offense if he's able to perform at that level with that amount of reps. So again, this is a team that I wouldn't be shocked if I dropped them down some if I don't see what I want on the offensive side of the ball. But when you just go in and look on paper, this roster is one of the five best rosters in the NFL. I don't think that's really arguable.
Patrick, I agree with Mike's breakdown of Dallas, but there's just something to me, even though the statistics suggest and imply that they could be both top five offensively and defensively, I can't put my finger on it, but something seems like it's missing for me when I look at this team.
I'm curious as to where you had the Ravens, because we were talking about them a little earlier. And again, it's almost like you have to throw the disclaimer out there when talking about any team, and you start with if they remain healthy. And part of the issue is Marlon Humphrey's indefinitely out, who is not good, but great at 27, a Pro Bowl cornerback. But I think their defense got better. They just had Jadeveon Clowney just to use him as a spot player off the edge. Offensively, Lamar Jackson, hasn't had talent like this. It's a team that I really like. Where'd you have the Ravens?
I've got the Ravens at 8th right now, sitting right in between the Jaguars at 7 and the Browns at 9. So they're smack dab in the middle there, and they've got a division rival right behind them.
Okay. I think that's fair. 8, Dustin, Amal, it feels fair. I probably would bump them up a little bit, but the Ravens not being disrespected and the Samich ratings there, right, Amal?
No, not at all. But I also think, as Mike alluded to, this is a fluid situation. And when you look at whether it's Dallas at 4, Baltimore at 8, I think in a week-to-week situation or scenario, things can change, an injury here or there. I think, to me, Mike, here's how I quantify the National Football League. I want to get your take on this. I think teams 1 through 4 are generally better and just superior to most of the rest of the league. And then 29 through 32 are completely inferior. And 5 through 28 are about 2 players and 2 plays away from being interchangeable at times.
I would probably make it a little bit more top heavy specifically this year, but I agree with that concept. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, the NFL market, one of the reasons I make power ratings, why I think it's so important that people should do that is, you really, if you stand by a rule where you're not going to upgrade or downgrade a team more than 2 points a week based off of injury, right? If there's an injury, you can change it more than that. But just off performance, if you don't upgrade or downgrade more than 2 points a week, you don't overreact to a lot of these teams. And it shows you why, you know, certain lines in week 2, week 3 look fishy. But if you go back to what you had before the season, it makes a lot more sense. And these numbers are changed for me quite a bit, week 1, week 2, and week 3 as well, because you have to at least look at the betting market and the closing lines and use those to say, okay, where am I way off market? Now let's look at why I'm way off market in those spots. How can I make adjustments so I make sure that I am taking into account where the money is coming from? Do I disagree with where the money's going? Do I want to keep my stance that I have on a certain team? Because what'll end up happening is you'll bet the same teams every single week if you're way off market and you don't realize why. So you have to figure out whether or not you want to correct that. In some cases, you don't. You want to be out ahead of the curve sometimes, but sometimes the market can help you find where you're behind the curve and get you back in the right spot.
And you're looking for a number. Let's use Arizona and Washington week one of the regular as a good example. You know, oftentimes as we get closer to the season, you're going to see these favorites get bet. Now, this number open Washington 6.5. I do see that Arizona got bet, so it's 6. But you said in your notes, you're keeping an eye on this game because if it ever gets to 7, which is a good possibility, again, that later money could be on the favorite in Washington. If it gets to 7, that's when you'd look to come back and take Arizona.
Yeah, I don't think there's that big of a gap. And one of the biggest reasons for me here is the quarterback position in Washington. I've got their quarterback ranked in the bottom 5 in the NFL right out of the gate. And so when I'm looking at that and I'm seeing a bottom 5 quarterback, yeah, the defense is good. There's some pieces on the skill side. I just don't see a lot of points in this game. And then that's represented by the total as well, sitting there at 39. When you have these low totals and you have spreads that push over a touchdown, it makes it exponentially more difficult to cover those spreads with lower totals. Points become more and more valuable. So when you're looking at the lowest total game of the week one, and you're looking at one of the higher spreads of week one, to me, that's a spot where you have to be looking at the dog. And I'm not sure why there's so much love for Washington. I keep hearing that that's the play for week one in Survivor, which I am vehemently against. I'm not sure. I would never be using Washington here in week one. I want Arizona if I can get a touchdown with them. They're a terrible team. No one wants to bet on them. Sometimes those are the best teams to bet on. You just hold your nose. You don't watch the game. You check the score at the end and hope they lost by 5.
I love Mike's point here, Patrick. Betting Washington to lay 7 feels like laying points with Vandy outside in a game. I mean, it's just crazy to me. I don't understand why this team is getting this big of a number right now in this particular matchup. We know Arizona's not going to be great, but who the hell are the Washington Commanders?
I think the defense could be special. That's all I'm going to say. I think the Washington defense at every level could be special. Del Rio, mid-season last year, turned that defense around. They fortified the back end. Samich, I do think that's the strength, obviously, of the team. The offensive line could be a disaster.
Yeah, the defense could be special, but the defense can give up 10 in this game and they won't cover the 7. Like that's the problem here, is that the offense is almost as bad as the defense is good. And I like Dotson and I like some of the skill positions, but Sam Howell to me is completely unproven as an NFL quarterback. This defense is going to have to give up consistently sub 14 points for them to win games.
Yeah, early reports out of camp in Washington, the offensive line, disaster. We continue with Samich next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Walters and Musburger, hell of a combination exclusively. We've got them next Tuesday, August 22nd, 2 East, 11 West. So this is pretty cool. Two legends. Billy Walters, greatest gambler of all time, Secrets from a Life at Risk. That's the new book. Billy's going to sit down with Brent Musburger, reveals his systems for betting the NFL, shares some unbelievable betting stories, and gives his details on Phil Mickelson's gambling, including trying to bet on an event he was playing in. Again, you're not going to want to miss this, I assure you. Check it out. Billy Walters and Brent Musburger next Tuesday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, only right here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Shaw, Samich, Sweetelson, I'm Maher as we welcome you back. Sharp Money on a Friday. I don't know if you have anything tonight. We were just going over Samich's power ratings as we get closer and closer to the NFL season. I know you got another week one bet we want to touch on, but let's quickly discuss the pre-tonight. Of course, you've got two games, Carolina at the Giants. The Giants, last time I checked, still sitting steady at 3. We did dip to 2.5, but back up to 3 here. This one, my assumption is you're going to see 3 series from Bryce Young and the starters. That offensive line, Samich, is a big question. And you're going to see the first of Daniel Jones and some of the starters there for the Giants. And then it will move to Tyrod Taylor and Tommy DeVito. Any thoughts? We've seen this total jump to 37.5. Some shops showing 38, but the Giants laying 3 tonight.
Yeah, I looked at this one for a while. I kind of want to pull the trigger on Giants minus 1.5 in the first half, but I haven't gotten myself able to do it quite yet. I may end up betting it before game time. A huge quarterback edge here. Look, Bryce Young behind that offensive line, those three series, I don't see being that productive. Really struggled week one in the preseason. You're getting Daniel Jones back. I realize he's not the best quarterback in the NFL, but for preseason, he is a very, very good quarterback. You get three series out of him. I think they're going to be able to successfully move the ball with him in there. And then Tyrod Taylor, you know, he's as good of a backup as there is. He played well in the first preseason game. DeVito played well in the first preseason game as well. I agree with the line here sitting as the Giants as a favorite. I like the first half as the edge more than the full game edge. So if I end up betting this, it'll be Giants minus 1.5. But to me, it's Giants or pass.
Mike, Cincinnati gave up a ton of points in week one against Green Bay, 36 points. The Falcons scored 19 against the Dolphins. Total's 38.5 here, but the number seems a little bit inflated to me at 6.5. I don't want to take Cincinnati here, but man, it's hard to lay it with the Falcons.
It is hard to lay the 6 for the full game with the Falcons in this spot. They're going to have their starters going for multiple series on both sides of the ball. And to me, that's the big edge here is the Falcons defense against two really poor quarterbacks here. I think you're probably going to have Simeon for the majority of the first half here for Cincinnati. Both of them were awful through two picks in that first game, the first preseason game. You're seeing the Cincinnati defensive starters for maybe a series here. Probably not going to be the full unit. So their edge early is big time on Atlanta. Desmond Ridder going to get to play against the second team. With all of his starters on the field, you'd expect you're going to see some success from Atlanta early. Again, for me, this is more of a first half bet. So I ended up laying the 4 with Atlanta in the first half. That's still readily available, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's 4.5 or 5 before the game, as soon as people kind of catch on to exactly who is starting early here for both Cincinnati and Atlanta. But if you get a full quarter of the starters for Atlanta, which is what we're hearing out of Arthur Smith right now, you're going to get a big chance here to have Atlanta have a nice 10-point lead, 10-point cushion early in this game. And then it's just whether or not they're able to keep this pretty bad Cincinnati backup offense out of the end zone in the second quarter. So I laid the 4 here with the Falcons in the first half. I think they're going to have a big edge with these starters playing.
Two team tease week one. You're going to start with the opener. Kansas City tease them down. And you're going to take Green Bay up. Let's get into the breakdown here, Samich.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas City, I have them as about a 7-point favorite in this game. When the line moved from 7 to 6.5 is when I wanted to try and get a teaser going here. I realize we're not in the Wong zone. We're not crossing over 8. We're not crossing over 7. But I do think there's some value in getting at the 0.5 versus the 1 point. And to me, the other part of this is I really wanted to tie a game with the second game in this teaser here. Green Bay plus 2.5 against the Bears right now. You can tease that up to 8. If you 8.5, I'm sorry, if you combine it with the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't think you're ever seeing 3 in this Green Bay Chicago game. If you never see 3, right now is your chance to get the best possible teaser number with Green Bay. They're probably going to be a straight bet for me as well in week one, because I do like Green Bay more than I like the Chicago team. I'm higher on Green Bay than most. I'm lower than Chicago than most. So for me, this is one of those I'm probably going to be firing at in week one, but I wanted to tease it up to 8.5 while I have the opportunity to do so. I expect this line is going to go off somewhere between the 1.5, 2 numbers. So this is the best opportunity to get the best possible number in both of these games. I'm not a huge advocate of betting week one way early unless you're really excited about a number. And to me, these are two games where I think you're getting the best of it right now.
Mike, let's stay in the NFC North for a second. Which team do you like to win the division? Because I like your take on Green Bay. When I look at this team, I don't know what Jordan Love's going to be, but I feel like the other 21 starters are better than everyone else potentially in the division, despite Minnesota's success last year.
I agree with you, Mal. I have a ticket at 5.5 to 1 on Green Bay. That's been bet down now. I think it's closer to 4 to 1 right now if you want to play them to win the division. But to me, this Packers team has all of the pieces. You've got two wide receivers who should take a step forward in Dobbs and Watson on both sides there. I think this is a good Packers team. People forget about the running back room. I mean, you've got both of their running backs coming back. Aaron Jones, very, very good. And then the offensive line should be improved as well. Bakhtiari going to be starting for them. It looks like he's going to be healthy. And I believe in Jordan Love. I know last week, Dustin and I got into it here. I'm still a Jordan Love believer. I thought he played well in the first preseason game. I thought he read the defense well. I think he's going to be a good quarterback. And when you look up and down this division, I don't think Chicago's that improved, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Detroit, they're pretty much the same team they were last year. And they were a 9-8 team last year that started out 1-7 and had an awful defense. They're going to have a bad defense again. I don't see them taking a big step forward. Minnesota, 11-0 in close games. We all have heard that before. Their Pythagorean win was closer to 8 for the season. This Green Bay team is ripe for the picking. And if you look at their win total over the last 3 years, it's wild as well. They had a 13 win total 2 years ago, 11.5 last year. Now it's sitting at 7.5. this is the time to be buying on the Packers.
I'm absolutely aware of you and Dustin disagreeing about Jordan Love last week because I was held hostage in a text thread right in the middle. Patrick in the middle. Because every time Jordan Love did something promising in that preseason game, you better bet your ass Samich was firing off a text to Dustin through me. And then Dustin was coming over the top with shtick. So, again, this is going to be a season-long thread, and that is the Jordan Love conversation. Dustin, are you still entrenched in the fact that I think you said he stinks?
Yeah, I mean, if he's going to go play flag football with the guys selling State Farm insurance down the road, sure, because half the guys on the defense he was facing are going to be doing that in, like, 4 weeks.
Would you like to retort, or shall we move on, Samich?
I mean, I think it's interesting if you look at the quarterbacks in this division, right? You've got Justin Fields, you've got Jared Goff, you've got Jordan Love, you've got Kirk Cousins. I think Kirk Cousins clearly number one. I could make an argument that the second best quarterback this year is going to be Jordan Love. Like Jared Goff, everything went perfect for him last year. I would be shocked if there's not some regression coming there. The offense should be good, but the offensive line is not very deep. If they face any offensive line injuries, that Detroit offensive line is in trouble, specifically in the interior. So I don't think this is a very good division from a quarterback perspective. I don't think it takes that much from Jordan Love to be good. And I like the fact that they signed him to an extension before he ever started a game. It tells you that they believed he was doing the right things and improving internally. And that organization has been very good with quarterbacks over the last 20 years.
You know, I like the point Mike made about the extension. One thing I've always been a firm believer in, and you saw this in college football at Texas, they always wonder why Sims started ahead of Major Applewhite, because he was better in practice. When a team is around a player constantly, they genuinely know what they have. And that's why I think the Seahawks moved on from Russell Wilson. They bamboozled the Broncos. I think Mike makes a great point. There, I think there's a greater belief in Jordan Love inside Green Bay than there is outside.
Nothing, Dustin.
I mean, we're going to trust the organization that refused to draft receivers in the first round for arguably the most pure passer we've ever seen in the history of the game.
Is there any first-round receiver they could have taken that's better than Devontae Adams?
Well, he needed help. They needed more weapons. He had no weapons. He's throwing to Mercedes Lewis. Mercedes Lewis graduated in your high school year, Amal. Jordan
this
Love.
This could end badly.
Jordan Love at
I'm just
best.
Warning the audience on the outside looking in. I'm going to let you two continue to fight, but this could end badly. Go ahead.
Jordan Love at best is what? Quarterback 18 in the league? 17 in the league? He's not special. Here's the best thing Jordan Love can do. Jordan Love could stink so bad that Caleb Williams is a Packer next year. That's the best thing he can do this year.
If Jordan Love is number 15 to 17 quarterback this year in the NFL, they win that division.
No That's question.
His peak. That's his peak 17. I'm talking like his career. He is so mid. I'm actually offended for the mid at calling him.
I don't think anyone can draw. I don't think anyone can draw a conclusive decision on him just yet. I think it's like Patrick. We talked about somebody earlier today. I forgot who it was, and you go, I don't have an opinion on him because we haven't seen enough of him. And I think it's the exact
Bateman.
Same thing with Love.
We'll just lay it.
Oh
out.
Yeah, Bateman. Thank you. Good call.
Jordan Love, Desmond Ridder, Geno Smith. Not buying it. Don't know why the rest of you are.
Hey, Dustin, I like how you arbitrarily threw out 17 for Love, but just quickly, could you give us 1 through 16 on your quarterback ratings before we go to break?
Real quick, while Mike was speaking, I did my own power ratings. They're right here.
Yeah. I would like to see the middle of the power ratings for him from the quarterback perspective.
Oh, you know what? That's what we're going to do. When we come back, 8 through 18 of your quarterback rankings, okay? We want the mid. Find out who Dustin Sweetelson has as mid. We also got to play with the Fish and Dodgers on the total coming up. Sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, are you a pro yet? Well, become one, a pro subscriber over at VSiN.com/subscribe. The only way to get the guides and everything we have to offer is to become a VSiN pro. I tell you every day, I'm serious when I tell you, $19 to start, if that's the way you want to slow roll it, or $199, it's worth it. If you have it, trust me, it's VSiN.com/subscribe. You get everything we offer. All right, so here's what we're going to do. Last segment, Samich. Amal Shaw, I'm Patrick Maher, Dustin Sweetelson, of course. So we got to make sure we get to his top 10, his top 10 fears. He loves the list. It's a great list. We'll get to it on the way out. But first, Dustin arbitrarily threw out that Jordan Love is 17 as far as his power rankings and quarterbacks. I'm sorry?
He said 17 was the peak.
Yeah,
that was the best possible for Jordan Love.
And then he kept on using the word mid, and it gave me an idea. Forget the top end. Forget the back end of quarterbacks of these 32 teams we call the NFL. Let's talk mid. I went to Samich for the math. The mid would be 11 through 21.
Oh, yikes. He's not. Wow. Okay.
Not a great response. However, let's find out who are exactly the mid quarterbacks as designated by Dustin Sweetelson. We'll start with number 11, big guy.
That would be Kirk Cousins, who I actually feel like I'm disrespecting here. I wanted to put him in my top 10. He just missed the cut.
Wait, hold on. Do you have your quarterback list in front of you, your power rating, Samich?
I do.
Okay, all I want you to do, don't expound. I just want you to give who you have at 11, 12, 13 consecutively. Who do you have at 11?
Cousins.
Damn, big guy. Let's go. 12.
Dak Prescott.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Russell Wilson.
What? Is that too high? Too low? Dak?
Wait, forget Dak.
I had Dak in the top 9, top 8.
Go ahead, them all.
Did I just hear Russell Wilson at 12?
Yeah.
Feels high.
What are we talking about? Wisconsin quarterbacks in the NFL?
Feels high. Okay. Dustin has 12. Who'd you have 12? Oh, Dak. Just abs. What was that? Because Goulet walked in? You're just hating on Dallas?
No, I just think that's where he is. I think him and Kirk Cousins could both be 11. They're the same thing.
13.
Matthew Stafford.
I have Matthew Stafford at 13, too.
Wow. Wow. 14. Let's go, big guy.
Derek Carr.
Geno Smith.
Similar. You're doing well. 15. Let's go.
Jared Goff.
Daniel Jones.
Goff feels high at 15. I mean, I'm just saying. 16.
Justin Fields.
Tua Tagovailoa.
Oh, I have
okay,
two.
I don't.
Two at 9.
Those two, very fluid. 17.
Ryan Tannehill.
Jared Goff.
Anything stand out thus far, Shaw?
No, I like the list a lot.
Which one?
I think they're both doing... you know what, Dustin? On the spot?
Yeah.
You're killing it. Let's go 18.
Daniel Jones.
I think it's fair.
I think it's fair.
Kenny Pickett.
Like if Jordan Love... He would have to take so much melatonin to dream about being as good as Daniel Jones.
Did you say, can I pick it? Yes, I can. If you're into hip hop back in the day, that'll make sense. 19. Go ahead, Dustin.
Geno Smith.
Jordan Love.
We have yet to reach Jordan Love, which... By the way, started with you saying he was 17 and he wasn't 17. So this is fun.
At 20. Best, at best, he's going to be 17. 20 for me is Russell Wilson.
Josh
that
Fields.
Feels right.
Or Justin Fields. I'm sorry.
Good pitcher, though.
Josh Fields is better than Russell Wilson at this point. So is Josh Towers. Shut the VEASAN. 21.
Mac Jones.
Mac Jones. There you go.
Now, that is a tremendous job. A tremendous job by you, Dustin. On the spot, and I think you had, of the 10, I think you had 5 slotted exactly where Samich did. That was put on the spot. Good job. Take a bow.
Do you want to know where I have Jordan Love?
Yeah, because you told us 17 and it changed.
Everyone guess. What number?
I've got Jordan Love at 24.
I got Jordan Love, let's see, 32. Honestly, 24, 25 feels right.
So, well, I think you probably have him at 34.
I have
Tyrod
him.
Tyrod Taylor and a couple other backups.
32 through 29, McCoy, Ritter, Howell, Stroud, and then Jordan Love at 28.
So I kind of quickly depends. So I went with Kyler Murray for the Cardinals. If you go with McCoy, I would agree with you on Jordan Love. I said there were 5 teams in the AFC. He's probably potentially a better quarterback than 3 being in the AFC South. And then I went with 3 teams in the NFC.
Jared Goff was high on your list. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, just look.
Ever heard of Ben Johnson? Ben Johnson should be 15, not Jared Goff, the offensive coordinator for the Lions.
But at some point, like, good things keep happening around Jared Goff, and everyone just keeps crushing the dude. Like, maybe he actually has, like, really good arm strength, and he's an accurate passer. He can't move. He's not a guy you can use in a creative system, but he can throw the football, and that's the number one goal right in the middle there at 15.
I think Goff's probably not a bad player, but he'll never meet the mark because he was a one overall. If he was a 27th pick in the first round, we're going, Jared Goff's had a nice career.
Hey, Dustin, can I ask you a question? Cousins did. It would have been great.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, exactly. The Shanahans wanted to draft Cousins at one overall, though, if they could have. They loved it. They were so thirsty in that draft. They drafted RG3 and were like, we can't wait to draft Cousins. Hey, Dustin, can I ask you a question? Because you keep on saying, using the word special when talking about those and their profession.
Yeah.
May I ask you a personal question?
Yeah.
Because we do self-reviews. We do reviews at DraftKings and VSiN. Do you consider yourself a special employee?
No, I'm a utility guy. I'm a scrapper. I do a lot of, I don't do anything exceptional, but I do a lot of things pretty good. And that helps me get away with things.
You know what you do great? First off, you're acting humble. I know you. You're the least humble person I've ever met.
My boss is in the room. It's awkward.
I know. He would trust me. The stuff he says in private, it would blow your freaking mind. Also, the stuff he does in private would blow your mind. Dustin's top 10 fears. Let's go. Falling, walking up the stairs with his mouth open was number 10. See, you are special. You are. Number 10 proves it. Number 9, being buried alive. Number 8, spiders. A little arachnophobia. Number 7. He fears fear itself. Shout to JFK. Plane crashes, number 6.
That's
go ahead,
one.
Pick it up from there. I know.
Time I'm on a plane, there's always a moment where I have a panic attack where I go, if this thing just crashed right now or blew up right now, I wouldn't even know and everything would just be over. Lights out, boom. What if it's right now? Boom. What if it's right now? Boom. What? And it just spirals into bad. It's a bad. So I start drinking.
If it blows up, you're not going to actually know it's coming.
That's the point. I'm like, right now, life could be over. Boom. Life could be over. Boom. Head on a swivel.
You sound like Madden on the Telestrator.
Tough acting to active.
Telestrating your own death.
Tough acting.
Next.
I'm 38 years old. I'm still scared of the dark. I always have a light on in my house. I'm terrified of the pitch dark. I always have a TV on. I have something coming through the door. Like, I need some sort of light. I cannot do dark. Scary things happen in the dark.
Number 4, I'll get Samich's take once we get to 3. Go ahead, 4, quick.
Yeah, I have a really big fear of choking, and it has impacted my dating life, but I'll keep
number
that to
3.
Myself. Number 3, snakes. They don't have legs. How are they moving?
That's valid. 10 through 3, anything stand out for you, Samich?
No, I'm surprised dark is so high for a 38-year-old, but we'll let it slide.
I don't like it. Man.
Putting dark ahead of being buried alive is it's a decision. It's a decision. Let's go with number 2.
One you only face once, and once I face every single night. All right, number 2 is happiness. I'm terrified.
Next.
If I was genuinely happy, I don't think it would make me happy overall. Like, I just don't think it would work. I love complaining. I love having enemies that aren't real. Real, genuine happiness would crush my soul.
There. Number 1, get ready, boys. Brace yourself in. This is going to be ridiculous. Number 1 is what?
Outer space. It scares me so much. Like, you remember in, like, elementary school, they'd bring the planetarium, the Star Lab in, and everyone would sit in it? Again, panic attacks. I'd be like, what do you mean it goes on forever? This poor person's making, like, minimum wage doing this tour of the stars that is, like, coming out of a book that they're reading. And I'm, like, 7 years old going, what do you mean it goes forever? It has to end at some point. It can't keep going. I am so scared of outer space and what's out there. It terrifies me.
Traveled there frequently?
Honestly, working on this show has made me think I should move there.
Samich, so like, anything on the list? Outer space and happiness is an interesting way to end it.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting outer space and happiness is 1 and 2. So if, like, you look up at the sky in the middle of the night, do you just freak out?
No, I just, if I don't see the horizon and I'm only looking at the sky, I snap. Like, I freak out. This is why I've never done mushrooms.
This list should have stopped.
Not a fan of camping either.
Not a big fan of camping because also, like, I work really hard. Why would I pretend I'm homeless?
Being buried alive is the list.
Drowning. Dustin. Drowning has to be on there.
Dustin, it's very clear. You are special. For Amal Shah, have a great trip. Mike Samich, I'm Patrick Maher. Buzz Aldrin, thank you as well for producing today. See you Monday here on
Godspeed.
Sharp Money.
Godspeed.